Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Johnny Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Johnny Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, your daily Bob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live on First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know it, BBM Bumber Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your Sabre columns on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land we broadcast from, and to all our traditional owners across the daily country of ours, welcome back to National Talk Black. Have your say, Yarn Up Strong, your mob to Delhi. We're going to jump straight into it. Got the beautiful lady from Murra Law. We got Fern Newcomb come to join me. And my sister, very good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Trev. Good morning to you too.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. Now, listen, our topic today, sexual harassment and the law. And look, we are all protected and in all facets, and no matter who you are, what you are, no one's above the law. Fern, so we're talking about that today and what sexual harassment actually is according to the law and its prevalence in the law industry as such, yes?
Yeah, both of them. So the sexual harassment revelations against former High Court Justice Dyson Heydon, they've recently been dominating the headlines. They're kind of the reason that this topic is on the agenda today. So these allegations or the findings of this investigation, it brought to light some concerns that if this kind of illegal behaviour is allegedly happening in a workplace that's supposed to follow the strictest letter of the law, what is happening in other workplaces?
Well, exactly. For anyone listening who may not know about the recent headlines, could you let us know what happened there with the the High Court Justice Dyson Heydon, please?
So the current Chief Justice, Susan Kiefel, handed down findings of an investigation with the former judge alleged to have sexually harassed six judges' associates. So judges' associates work very closely with the judge or justice, as they're called at the High Court, and it is an exceptionally prestigious role in the legal profession. So it brings like a wealth of experience and knowledge that a judge's associate gains from performing the duties are almost incomparable with any other position in the legal profession. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the role's upside.
Yep. Downside?
Downside. Its downside is that it's generally a role that comes with a massive power imbalance attached to it. So the judge's associate is definitely at the short end of that straw.
Yep.
Judge's associates are usually also young lawyers, not necessarily young in age, but at the start of their careers. At the start of their careers.
Career-wise.
Yeah. As the majority of the law graduates are women, they tend to take up a lot of these roles. So it sort of turns that into a gendered issue as well as a power issue.
So, continue.
Sorry, the law doesn't really have a monopoly on roles where there are huge power imbalances amongst employees and where the positions at the lower end of the spectrum are dominated by women and positions at the higher end of the spectrum are dominated by men. Sorry about all my teeth. I've got my braces tightened yesterday.
Oh, so good. There you go. That's fantastic. Like I always say, running these teeth and for somebody else, you're doing exactly that. Look, so these allegations have brought up all workplaces in that way, not just legal workplaces.
Yeah, they definitely have. So I work in the legal profession, so that's the lens that I'm looking at it through. But these principles apply in any workplace anywhere in this nation. What has come to light with the Dyson Heydon headlines is that sexual harassment is a major obstacle to women lawyers fully and equally participating in the legal profession. Mm-hmm. So a 2013 Law Council of Australia survey called the National Attrition and Re-Engagement Survey, or NARS for short, found that one in four women have experienced sexual harassment in their legal workplace.
Wow, yep.
So that's a quarter of them. A key reason. So it's also a key reason why women leave the law. Commentators have also said that there are barriers in the legal system that prevent women from choosing to make complaints, actually, like, as in not enough policy in place where they actually can make complaints, or knowing that if they do make complaints that their career is going to be in tatters.
Well, when you look at the high end of the law, and you get, a person in this position, like Dyson Heydon, they're, in a way, they're protected, so to speak, in regarding their status, so to speak, and they can part things with the knowledge is power. You know,
definitely
all the above, but
power imbalances,
no one's above the law, is what we're saying.
No,
and you're supposed to a duty of respect and call, because you swear as a lawyer that you abide by the rules.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's the whole point of the profession.
Yeah, exactly.
Is abiding by the law. Yeah. It's
so, what is sexual harassment in the workplace? What is it?
So its legal definition is an unwelcome sexual advance, unwelcome request for sexual favours, or other unwelcome conduct of a sexual nature which makes a person feel offended, humiliated and or intimidated, where a reasonable person would anticipate that reaction in the circumstances. So that's just a really fancy way of saying it's anything that kind of makes people feel really uncomfortable, or like they're being discriminated against, or I mean, I know it's a fine line between, you know, giving people a compliment, but it's also when you get that power imbalance happening,
sure,
is where I think it tends to make it worse. So the Sex Discrimination Act makes this kind of behavior unlawful, and a working environment or workplace culture that is sexually permeated or hostile is also unlawful.
Mm-hmm.
So there are indications in the case law that hostile and permeated in this sense can include displaying pornography, general sexual banter, crude conversation, and even innuendo.
Which is a funny
word in itself.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. Exactly. So if you're a boss and you find out or know that your employees are engaging in this kind of behaviour, what does that mean for you?
So an employer may be vicariously liable if an employee commits sexual harassment and the employer did not take all reasonable steps to prevent it.
Mm.
So in other words, if you as a boss see this happening and don't do anything about it, or you don't have any policy or training in place to prevent or report sexual harassment, you can be held liable.
Well, exactly. Well, you need to create a safe workplace, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
And if we're talking about CEO or manager or the owner of the company, you've got to have all that in place.
Yeah,
that is the law, is
yeah,
it not?
Yeah.
Exactly. Let's talk the law. So more information about this, where do people go?
So the Legal Aid website says if you have been the victim of sexual harassment, you should get legal advice. If you or someone you know is in danger, contact the police. And, of course, in an emergency, dial 000.
Mm-hmm.
So online, Lean In is a great resource. You can find them at leanin.org and then /sexual-harassment/individuals, or you can just Google Lean In sexual harassment support.
Mm-hmm.
If you need some commercial or native title legal advice, of course, you can always call us at Marawa Law on 4041-3088. You can also get more information about anything law-related from your local law society. So the Queensland Law Society's number is 1-300-367-757.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, if you're an Indigenous business and you need some pro bono support, specifically relating to difficulties your business is facing from the COVID-19 crisis, head to our website, www.marawalaw.com, and register your details on the pop-up tile.
Lovely. Fantastic work that Marawa Law is doing regarding the pro bono during COVID-19. Thank you very much. Let the mob know, Fern, who Marawa Law is.
So we are the nation's leading independent Indigenous legal firm that specialises in commercial and Indigenous land law. So you can check us out and get all our contact details that I just said online at marawalaw.com.au.
To Deadly, my friend, thank you so very much. All the best to your Deadly team at Marawa Law. Say hello to the guys and girls there, and we'll talk soon, Fern.
Will do. You too, Trev. Bye.
Too deadly. Very beautiful. That is Fern there, Fern Newcomb from Murrah Law, and the topic there is sexual harassment and the law. So we are all protected, especially our beautiful women out there, and girls can do anything and stand up and be strong, and us brothers need to support that, and we need to check ourselves as well. But at the same time, sexual harassment could come the other way, very rare, but a female on a male, and brothers, you can stand up too, you know. So there it is, your mob. Have your say, Yarn Up Strong, here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. Yarn with Bullier and Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live on First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbabrit Media, 98.7 FM. And we got Cross Nation, thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Give the Murray call, let's have a yarn, 1-800-422-416.
My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, your daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbabrit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your saber calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, now, food ministers prioritised the community safety and health, agreeing to a visible pregnancy health warning on alcohol products. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Sophie Harrington, Chief Operating Officer, National Organisation for Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder, NOFASD Australia, on the line. Sophie, a very good morning. How are you?
Hello, Trevor. Good morning. Thanks for letting me join you today and along with your listeners.
No, thank you very much for coming to the program. Where are you based, Sophie?
I'm actually over in Western Australia, so I'm feeling quite lucky right now with the current COVID crisis, Trevor.
Yeah, likewise here in Queensland. Look, fantastic. And Liz, we are living in a different world at the moment, COVID-19, and it's really turned our world upside down. But the only vaccine we got at the moment is abiding by the rules. And look, we're doing that. You're on the phone over in WA. I'm on the phone in Cairns, so we're doing that bit.
Absolutely, we are.
Let's talk about the food ministers prioritise the community safety and health, agreeing to a visible pregnancy health warning on alcohol products. Long time waiting, but this is good news, you could say, yes?
Oh my goodness, Trevor, you could hear the shouts and screams around the different places when we got the news. I can tell you on the 17th of July, there was more than 4,000 individuals, I think more than 160 organisations, and around about 70% of the population that were saying that, you know, we must have a mandated label. So this new visible health warning label that's been approved by a number of the ministers, it means that people, well, as in the community, will now see that there is a visible health warning label that advises people before they pick up that bottle that it can cause harm to a developing baby. So, you know, we needed this message. There's a word that was used often in the FASD world around a teratogen, which means a poison.
Yes.
And alcohol is a poison to a developing fetus, so it's so important to have that warning label on those products.
And the label, it is labelled as such, isn't it? But it's in very fine print. So we're talking about enlargement or big signs or posters and advertised on TV and radio, here we are talking, whatever means necessary to promote the fact that the products are of alcohol products, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, before the label didn't have to be applied, and when it was applied, it was quite sort of greyish. And the alcohol industry were very keen to water down that label, but now the label will be on a white background with black writing and a red warning symbol. So really, really powerful for everybody to see, because raising awareness around fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, which is a diagnostic term basically for the impact alcohol causes to the brain and body of a developing fetus, raising that awareness is a community responsibility. It's not all about saying that women mustn't drink or women shouldn't have drunk. We know that more than 50% of pregnancies in Australia are unplanned.
Yes.
And around about 60% of pregnancies are exposed to alcohol. So it's really making sure that the community awareness is raised. And, you know, Trevor, it's really hard to be able to get people to say no or to understand when there actually isn't a warning to say what the dangers can be.
Well, exactly.
Really,
we're going through a dark tunnel, so to speak. Sophie, as I said, you're the Chief Operating Officer, National Organisation for Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder, NOFASD Australia. But look, it comes with a bit of weight in regard in your position because of the fact that you also shared your personal story that your eldest son has been diagnosed with FASD. Is that correct?
I have, yeah, and I actually only found out, believe it or not, about 2 months ago, Trevor, and the only reason why I even started to pursue the assessment for him was because I joined NOFASD 2.5 years ago, and for the first time ever in my life, despite having worked with a number of families and children who have had FASD on the front line, I'd never actually considered it could be something that my own child had.
Yeah.
He'd been to lots of different health professionals and we had no answers, and nobody ever asked me if I'd if I'd consumed alcohol during pregnancy. Dare I say, I think no one asked me because I didn't fit what community expectation is. And I'm going to say this a bit controversial, but it's assumed that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have higher consumption of alcohol, and often are blamed, and awareness has been raised in some Aboriginal populations because there's been such amazingly strong advocates who've allowed people in to do research into their community in the space of FASD. But what we do know is that actually the higher area of prevalence is women who have an education, who are on good income, and who aren't Indigenous in terms of the area of prevalence of FASD now. So it's really important for me. I felt when I spoke during the Senate inquiry recently and throughout the labelling campaign that I needed to make people aware that this is everybody's issue. It's
exactly.
Not one culture.
And you can't be discriminative with it, can you?
Because alcohol doesn't discriminate, does it?
Exactly.
It's that sadly a poison that, it is a poison for a baby that's developing, and it's just awareness isn't there. For myself personally, my story was that I actually had consumed alcohol before I knew I was pregnant.
Mm.
So I didn't know I was pregnant until 6.5 weeks, which is not that far in.
Exactly. So it can be like a mistake in that sense as well, can't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, who sets out to intentionally damage their baby? Nobody
exactly.
does that.
So exactly.
This is usually because people don't know about the damages and the harms of alcohol, or they don't know they're pregnant.
Sure.
Or if they do and they're drinking and they can't stop drinking, then they need support, not judgment. That's so important.
They need support, not judgment. Hear. Like that phrase, so very true. Thank you so very much for sharing, my sister. It looks all the best to you and your team and your family and the world that we live in. And look, there's great news. The Food Minister prioritised the community safety and health agreeing to visible pregnancy health warning on alcohol products. That's great news. And this is going across the country, is that right?
It is, I hope so.
Well,
absolutely.
That's right, certainly. Exactly. I'm thinking it's just WA, but it's across the country, isn't it?
The whole country, absolutely. Beautiful. This is reformed by government.
Yep,
sure.
Lovely. Nice talking with you. Thank you very much for sharing. Like I said, all the best to my sister. We'll be in touch. And stay strong, okay?
Thank you, Trevor. All the best.
Bye-bye. A beautiful yarn there. Sophie Harrington, her name is Chief Operating Officer, National Organisation for Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder, NOFASD Australia. And look, great news about the Food Minister's prioritising the community safety and health agreement to a visible pregnancy health warning on alcohol products. And that's what it's all about. And like I said, alcohol doesn't discriminate, and we need to do what we need to do to protect our young ones, our pickaninnies, who come to join us in this beautiful world. You can have your say, mob. Yarn up strong here on National Talk Black. Deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. Yarn up with Bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, and we're live here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbleroot Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Give me a call. Let's have a yarn. 1-800-422-416.
Jai Walker and Deirdre Shorty with someone's daughter, Nathan Reynolds and Melissa Dunn, Eddie Russell, someone's son, Malcolm Smith and Roy James Boney, Joyce Clark, who was someone's on. Tony Chatfield and Bradley Coolwell. Monty Salt, who was someone's uncle. Bruce Les and Maureen Mandajara. Milton Wells, who was someone's father. Clarence Neen, Veronica Baxter. Muriel Binks, someone's mother. Douglas Scott and Greg Dunlop. Faith Barnes, I'll keep on going. There's Harrison Day, Trevor King, and Charlie Michael. It ain't nothing, cause I got more. Like Alistair Riversley, Charlie Highlight's just too easy. There's Barbara Yarry, and Christine Jones, and Roy Walker. And on it goes, then Daniel York, then Sheldon Cully, then Dixon Green. Or someone stop me.
Yeah, Daily Track, can you hear us? That's Paddy McHugh and featuring Dan Rennie. And look at Daily Track. Have you say yarn up strong, you mob, or here on Daily Program. National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416 with the Bully Run 20. Trev Murray from the Curry. Going to catch up now with Merv Eads online, WA. Merv, good morning.
Good morning, Trev. How you doing, brother?
I'm good, my brother. How you travelling? All right?
Yeah, I'm going good, thank you.
Good, good, good. What's happening, brother?
Brother, I'd like to just say a couple of words on the closing the gap targets.
Yes.
73 years is the target date.
73 years,
yeah. 73 years. I've got a 3-year-old son.
Yeah, brother.
He'll be 70 if he makes it to that. All of us generation that are here today will more than likely be gone. Why should we have a target on our basic human rights? As custodians, the oldest culture and people in the world, on invaded land, where it is the 12th richest economy on earth, why have we got to have targets?
And that takes off the action that needs to be done here with the government and for the next 70 years.
For the next 70 years, brother.
Exactly.
Who's going to be here to see those targets?
Not you and I, brother.
Not you and I, no. And with the way the world is going, 73 years for targets. And when we look at the incarceration targets, the suicide targets, of all the targets of our people, every target of our people.
Housing, employment, education, employment, health, all of it. 76 years, that's real nice, isn't it?
Oh, it's really nice, and it's actually disheartening.
It is.
And it's an insult to our people.
Yep.
It's a huge insult to our people. The people that, the coalition should never have let them make a date of 73 years. Have a target of 20 years,
exactly.
15 years, whatever.
Yes.
Or have a target of every year that a certain target is met.
Well, you might as well go the full Monty, you know, might as well go 100 years.
It is really disheartening, and, you know, it's the basic human rights of our people.
Yeah, I'm hearing you, brother.
We've been smashed here in our country for that long, but we got to have targets to reach.
Yeah.
I call that systemic racism.
That is
how I see it, and I see it as an insult to our people.
Yes.
73 years to make things better for us.
Yep.
Well, they've had 230 plus years already. No targets have been met. Realistically, our people are still the most impoverished people here.
Yep.
It is a joke.
Well, if you put 76 years onto helping non-Indigenous Australians regarding their livelihood, it wouldn't be 73 years, brother. You there, Merv? No, lost Merv. There's Merv Eads there from WA. And look, having his say about the 73-odd years in regarding closing the gap, the so-called date, and he's devastated by that, and a lot of First Nation people are. Add to the conversation. Tell us what you think here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
G'day, you mob. This is Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live on First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go via NERS, National News Radio Service. We go across the country. Give us a call on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, COVID-19 has pushed a lot of people in social in isolation. We're going to talk to Nathan Simicides, a PhD student and from Melbourne, Victoria there, and talk about technology to promote communication of emotion in times of social isolation. Nathan, very good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. So we are living in a different world thanks to COVID-19, and we're talking about isolation because of the pandemic. Uni student you are, PhD. Technology. To promote communication of emotion in times of social isolation. Look, technology, change with the times, using tools that are available. And here we're talking about social isolation and the emotion of it. Please explain how that all that works, please, Nathan.
Yeah, sure. So the focus of my research at the moment is how we can use technology, in specifically neural interface technology, to help people communicate subjective experiences of consciousness that includes emotion. So things like how people are thinking or feeling and stuff like that. How can we better use that to communicate? How can we use technology to help people communicate those things? And so with COVID and social isolation and whatnot, one of the main ways that we're communicating with each other right now is technology. You know, we have things like Skype and Zoom, and people are working online. People are, especially here in Victoria, we're going down into a second lockdown. Most people are, their primary means of staying in contact with their family are things like video calls and video conferences and phones and stuff like that. So, it's important that we understand how we can actually, you know, maintain that emotional bandwidth that you get from face-to-face human interaction during times like this, in which you can't actually have face-to-face human interaction. And luckily, my research had me looking at how we could sort of add that emotional, or even enhance beyond traditional levels, that emotional content in human interaction through technology. And so one of the strongest ways in which you can convey that is through having the machine being able to recognize people's emotions and then communicate them somehow.
So you say machine, linked up through cords and what have you on our head, or with a so-called hard hap on our head and connection to the machine? I'm just trying to paint the picture on what it looks like there, please.
Yeah, so there are a variety of ways you can have a machine. I say machine, but really I'm referring to a computer or some device with computational ability. There are a variety of ways you can do that. So I think a lot of people are familiar with things like facial recognition and being able to detect emotion from facial recognition and stuff like that. But what I've been doing at the moment is using EEG, so electroencephalography, which is where you it's some kind of cap that has little electrodes on it, and through those electrodes that reads the electrical activity that's being produced by your brain when you're engaged in thought and feeling and stuff like that. And so through that, it's able to interpret things like what your mental state is at the time and what your emotional state is at the time.
So with that, that's a way of communicating. Is that for people who cannot talk, or is it just for across the board for communication in regard to the emotion?
Good question. So traditionally these technologies were often used in a medical capacity to diagnose diseases such as epilepsy and stuff like that. And what we were able to find out is we can actually, if we pay very close attention to the signals being produced by the brain, we can actually use them to infer other information such as emotion or communicative information. For example, people have been able to use these things kind of like a keyboard. So for people with locked-in syndrome and stuff like that, they can use similar technologies to be able to like spell out words like a keyboard by looking at like a keyboard and focusing on specific letters, and then the machine is able to interpret them, which letter that they're looking at based on the frequency that their brain's outputting electrically, and then input that into maybe like a mobile phone or a computer or something, or a voice synthesizer so they can talk. Mm-hmm. But in my case, it's less about language communication and more about communicating emotions without language, so without text, but more representing them as images that can be hopefully interpreted universally across different languages and cultures and things like that.
Nathan, do you find that COVID-19 has given you, as a student, urgency to work in this field with technology in regard to communication of emotions?
Oh, definitely. Yes. I feel that, so one thing that it's sort of made apparent to me is that not only do we have to think about how technology can help us communicate emotion in general, but also how it can help us communicate emotion over space, and how space comes into that communication of emotion. So, like I was saying earlier, we're often, we're all socially isolated in different houses. We're trying to communicate over like phone calls and video calls and stuff like that. So how do you send emotion through that?
Exactly.
It's very difficult. And so like with our next project, actually, with the project
I'm trying to send through my emotion of excitement and learning what I'm hearing from you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, like especially like with this phone call, for example, I can't necessarily see your facial expressions. I can kind of gauge your emotional reaction through your voice's inflections and stuff like that. But because I'm doing most of the talking, I can't really see how you're reacting to a lot of the things.
Well, it just shows that I've got a good pair of ears. Look, I think it's fantastic, and we are using technology, which is very important, and all facets of life. And you're talking about the emotion of a human being, a way of communicating. And that's not being going on the Privacy Act. It is just a form of communicating, which is very important for all for human life. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, the privacy is like also very important in that, and it's something that's come up a lot in my research where people have used like the devices that I've created with people, saying that they're worried about if this became like a widespread technology, especially with things like reading emotions, like if this became widespread, could everybody feeling at all points, at every point in time? Like, can everyone just look at me and understand my emotion? Or is that something I want to do? So that's something that we have to consider going into the future with these kinds of technologies.
I think it'd be good for men, for husbands and boyfriends to communicate with their other halves, because sometimes we men don't know what our lady's thinking, but the emotion may help us in regard to relationship and longevity, yeah?
Yeah, that's actually a lot of the participants who, it's funny that you say, a lot of the participants that tested out these technologies were couples, and they did sort of report that it helped them become more attuned to what their partners were feeling during their reactions to work, or relaxation activities, listening to music and stuff like that, which is very interesting.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for sharing. I think it is fantastic. Like I said, we're in the 21st century. We are moving forward, and we're using technology to live life and try and live a better life, a smoother life, so to speak. And communication is very important. Thank you very much, Nathan. All the best to you and the rest of your students. And look, stay safe in the climate we're living in, and stay warm too, my friend.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thanks, Nathan. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dedly Young there, PhD student, Nathan Simazidis, and talking about the new technology to promote communication of emotion in times of social isolation thanks to COVID-19. Just fasten up the process and regarding the project that young Nathan was working on. And there was the conversation about communication of emotion in isolation. There it is. Have your say, Yarn Up Strong here on National Talk Black. Dedly number here is 1-800-422-416. You are yarning with the Bully Run, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. BBM Bummer Brip Media, 98.7 FM. Give me a call, let's have a yarn. 1-800-422-416.
G'day folks, Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it.
A very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program. Very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns as BBM Bumba Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your saber calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, going to catch up a yarn now with Aaron Harper, MP, member for Thurringara, and he's also the chair of the Health Community Disability Services and Domestic and Family Violence Prevention Committee there. And we're talking about the committee calls for submissions on the Emeraba Omasco Kezeba, and that's the Torres Strait Island Traditional Child Rearing Practice Bill, which is coming to a hearing, so which is fantastic news, where LAW meet LORE. I've got the MP on the line. Aaron, very good morning. How are you?
Oh, good morning, Trevor, and thank you very much for the opportunity to speak on this historic piece of work before the Queensland Parliament.
Yeah, and you say historic because it's the first time ever, we're talking about LORE meeting with LAW. And fantastic in regarding culture and island custom in regard to how they've been operating for years and generations, and now we're coming to the Parliament to discuss a bridge builder, I see it as, yes?
Very much so, a bridge builder. This is historic, and in, not in any other Australian Parliament or jurisdiction has LORE been recognised in LAW, and this is, you know, we have our traditional language being put into this bill. That means for our children's children in relation to Torres Strait Islander child rearing practices, recognising that,
yes,
and giving it legal status to overcome years and decades of obstacles. And I must recognise the Kupai Omasco Working Party that have put so much work into this over,
yes,
over 30 years, since 1985, to overcome this barrier, and it's going to happen. This is something that we're very excited as a chair of the committee to go up and listen and to hear from people.
Exactly, beautiful.
Right throughout Queensland. We start in Townsville, with, of course, Townsville having a large Torres Strait Islander population, where I am from, and then we'll move to Cairns. Next week on Tuesday, Bamaka up in the MPA on Wednesday, and then over to Thursday Island on Thursday, Saibai on Friday. So for us, it's about listening.
And we're loving the due diligence in regards to listening and taking the mountain to the people, so to speak, which is
absolutely
fantastic in regard to the discussion. I must make mention of the beautiful MP, Sister Cynthia Louie, State Member of Cook, who brought the bill to, introduced it to Queensland Parliament back in 16 July. So being a First Nation lady and a Torres Strait Islander lady, she knows what comes with a bit of weight in regard to the discussion, yes?
Absolutely, and Cynthia, there was not one dry eye in the house.
Yes.
We were all out in the chamber behind, of course, with COVID, and we can't all be in there, but this was historic, and Cynthia did a magnificent job bringing that into the Parliament, and we got to meet Miss Ivy Trevelyan and a number of other key people that have been working on this for decades who came down for that, and it was emotional. It was historical, and we've got, you know, this is the next step, is for the committee to go out and hear what people have to say about it, listen to some of those barriers that, you know, other people might take for granted, Trevor, like getting a license, birth certificate, tax file number, a driver's license, passport, tax file number. These things are what people take for granted on the mainland, and sometimes retelling that story, because this has happened for a millennia. This child rearing practice has happened for generations.
Exactly.
And through, and I know there are different groups. We've already had one public hearing in Brisbane where we had Ivy join us from the Torres Strait and was able to provide some of the background to the practice. You know, sometimes it's bloodline and family, and depending on whether you're Eastern or Western Island, there are slightly variations to it. But what this does is finally recognise in law, L-A-W, that L-O-R-E. This is a huge step.
Exactly.
Huge step for,
and when you look at the bill that incorporates the terms from Torres Strait Island languages, Eastern Island and Top Western language, will it translate to for our children's children, which is how they've operated that island custom, like I said, for generation. And it's good that it's coming to the table in regard to the Queensland Parliament, you know.
It certainly is, and to recognise that in language, and I think that absolutely says everything for our children's children. We are doing work together now, hand in hand, with people of the Torres Strait to finally recognise a practice that will overcome all obstacles and continue to recognise, legally recognise that, that custom. So really looking forward to being up in the island, absorbing some of the culture up in the Cape, and meeting wonderful people and hearing from them about, you know, their experiences. And we're going to do it, Trevor, both in public. There are sensitivities around this.
Sure,
and,
exactly.
And in private. You know, some people might want to talk in private, and we're going to offer both. Either way.
And respect that privacy, but also have that platform for people to openly speak or to privately speak.
Yeah. And either way, they'll both inform the committee as we put together our report, which I'm just absolutely humbled to, you know, put together and table into the Parliament on the, I think, 28th of August. We've got this month to turn all the work of the working party into our recommendations, which will be tabled in the Parliament.
I'm looking at the list of committee members here, Aaron, including yourself. There's Michael Berkman, MP member for Marwa, Barry O'Rourke, MP member for Rockhampton, Mark McArdle, MP member for Caloundra, Martin Hunt, MP member for Nicklin, and Joan Pease, MP member for Lytton. If you don't mind me asking, any of those are First Nation people?
No,
they're not, and that's why I'm loving the engagement with people on their own country and discussion with the hearing. Now, the hearing is also private and public throughout the time of Monday 3rd to Friday 7th of August. So that's like I said, there's the conversation that needs to be had, and you need to get evidence or hear it from the people that operate it. Under LORE, for you to get a grasp of what you're dealing with here, yes?
Absolutely, and it's vital that we're able to hear those stories. Now, it's, the member for Rockhampton has some medical challenges at the moment, and thankfully, Cynthia Louie will be joining us on our committee from the hearings in Bamaga Thursday
on Sci-Fi.
So we really look forward to having the member for Cook on the committee to help us do this historic and important work that will set the scene now for many, many generations to come. They'll have legal recognition.
Look, it is a first. It's fantastic. It's great news. We are in the 21st century. It's, like I said, a bridge builder. Long time waiting, so to speak, and just loving the engagement that's about to be had. Aaron, thank you very much for sharing, and all the best to you and your committee and your team and your family in the world that we're living at the moment, you know, COVID-19, you know, that's the other thing.
Challenging
everywhere,
challenging word. I must say I'm pretty proud to be part of the Palaszczuk government, who gave a election commitment in 2017 to do this important work with the traditional child rearing practice, and recognise that, and we're delivering on that. But also her leadership with COVID-19 in Queensland has been second to none. She's done a mighty job. We text each other in between Parliament sittings. I think she's done an outstanding job in reassuring and putting the health and safety and welfare of people with what is a global pandemic and a challenge for all of us. And we all need to be careful and do those practical measures, and the committee will be doing that when we go to visit communities. We must.
Well, Aaron, that's the only vaccine we've got at the moment by the rules.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So looking forward to engaging with people. We'll do it in a COVID-safe way.
Watching this very carefully, Aaron. Thank you very much. All the best to you and your team. You take care.
Thank you, Trevor.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
a deadly yarn there with Aaron Harper. His name is the MP, Member of Parliament, Member for Thurringowa, and he's also the Chairperson of the Health, Community, Disability Services and Domestic Family Violence Prevention Committee. And look, there's a committee that's calling for submissions on the Meriba Abascus Kaziba. And that's the bill, and that's the Torres Strait Island Traditional Child Rearing Practices. And pardon my pronunciation there, but it's about our children's children, for our children's children. And they're going to have hearings that's open to the public, as well as private hearings, from Monday 3rd to Friday 7th of August. And that's where LAW meets LORE. And it's fantastic that our people are strong in the Torres Straits. Their culture, island custom is very strong. And they are now conversing with LAW, as in the law of Queensland, in regarding their practices. And I see that fitting with also Cynthia Louie, sister MP, for the member of Cook Shears, and being a Torres Strait Islander woman, a strong black woman, and be at the table for that bill as well, which is fantastic. Have your say, you mob, yarn up strong, add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. You are yarning with the ball, you are Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BB and Bumber Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We're across the nation, thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. All right, big shout out to my beautiful mob as well. On my father's side, 1 year Gungalita, all the mob there, Cloncurry, Mount Isa, Doomadgee Way, Mornington Island, my family there, my mother's side, Darnley Island, Erub, Torres Straits, and with me in spirit, my beautiful mother. Have your say, yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416.
G'day, this is Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7.
I remember the day I had to meet you here today.
Aim for more. Kiss and say goodbye here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Give me a call, 1-800-422-416. 7 minutes left on the program. Yarning up strong here on National Talk Black. Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. We're going to catch up now and have a yarn. We've got Tony Gibbs on the line. Tony, very good morning. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. It's good morning, everybody. That's amazing you had Aaron on, because I ran into him yesterday.
Who's that, sorry?
Aaron, the man.
Oh, okay.
And I was getting around yesterday handing out that copies of that paper, the yarn.
Yes.
And I was handing them, well, I went to the gallery and I went all over. People used to work there. And a white lady came out and I said, well, haven't you got any Aboriginal or cultural? I said, are you Aboriginal? And she said, no. Mm. And to me, that was... I just feel that people are more comfortable talking to Murrays, especially Murrays, when they go to the hospital.
Sure, exactly, yeah. Black on black.
Yeah, black on black. So so then because I was chasing the files, because I wanted an inquiry into certain things, and they were... So released the material, and I wouldn't release it while she was a patient. But now, and I said, I can't do it while she's in the hospital because they might treat her unfairly, you know.
Mm.
I think, well, we can stop things happening again. But yesterday, to find that Brian and I don't know who else isn't working there anymore, that's a change. And then I went up to the patient files. So, anyway, back to, I ran into Aaron yesterday, and he reckoned God arranged that meeting, because he was looking for somebody local to talk to. So we talked for quite a while, and I was getting around putting the papers in bus stops, what you call seeding, you know, like you see Farmer God, I'm throwing seeds in the ground. Well, I was putting papers all over town.
Putting the word out, brother, putting the word out.
Putting the word out, I went to the shopping centres and I left that magazine everywhere. It cost me a lot of money, and I put them all over town. I put them in bus stops where people could sit on the bus and read them. I put them in phone boxes. I put them everywhere, and I'm going to release them tomorrow in Gordonville. But Aaron's a very, very strong person, and I was at the meeting because I was handing out a lot of them papers to Murray's too. But I'm just disturbed that the hospital doesn't have actually culturally appropriate people doing the job of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander officers, to put it in a nutshell.
Yeah, well, that should be the case. I mean, that's the title, isn't it? So you should be having First Nation people working in that area.
Yeah, well,
you would think.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the purpose of my call. I'm trying not to make any frivolous calls, and I think that's important too. Mm. Okay.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Sharon. You take care, my brother.
Oh, sorry. One other thing.
Yep.
Well, I mentioned yesterday about the Shibai being close to New Guinea for covert coming in. I heard basically a duplication of what I said on Migaloo radio station today too. Mm. So we are doing a good job getting that in.
We are doing a good job. Thank you very much, Sharon, brother.
See you later.
You take care, Tony. All the best. Bye-bye. Tony Gibbs having his say and being his body a little bit upset regarding looking for Indigenous staff up there at the Cairns-based hospital, and a non-Indigenous staff person come forward wearing that hat. So go figure. I wonder what's going on there. We'll find out, get to the bottom of it. That is the case. Have your say. Yarn up strong. You may have to do that next week, you mob, because Murray going to sign off here with National Talk Black. It's a one-hour program, Monday to Friday, 11 a.m. to 12 noon. It's come to the time where Murray going to sign off here. But look, I thank you very much for your company. We are still in the pandemic, and especially mob down in Victoria and New South Wales, thinking of you, mob. And we need to do a bit here in Queensland, across the other states and territories as well. Abide by the rules. We keep practicing social distancing, 1.5 metres away from each other. Wash your hand constantly. Wear a mask when available. And don't question it. Just do what you need to do. And a lot of people out there marching about against the mask and freedom of speech and what have you. I don't know. It's not about being right. To me, it's about doing what's right, and that's the thing. Have your say, yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416, number you need to call. Murray going to sign off, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. More importantly, stay safe, you mob, too deadly.
Hey, what you doing, your mob? It's me, Bushtaka Bungie, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Makaran.
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.